Welcome one and all once again to Nerds on the Rocks episode 174. We are here this week to bask in the glory of another E3 coming gone.
Ah, fuck!
That's our basking, all right.
Justin is really excited that it's over, I guess, or really upset that it's over. So joining me this week, of course, you heard Justin.
Hi. Oh, Jesus. I'm sorry, I'm playing Tomb Raider, and ow. I just got to the part where she lands on that spike.
And we have Dan.
Hi.
Who is not playing a vicious fight game, saying Wind Waker, I should say.
Damn, that hurts.
Well, yeah, she survives it somehow, and she survives not in that video game.
Dude, I wish I had, like, her health system.
And apparently, even with all that, she still survived enough to go to therapy and kill stuff anyhow.
Do what you gotta do.
Because he did get an announcement of a new Tomb Raider game at E3. Well, actually, two new Tomb Raider games.
The main one is Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Which is a terrible name. I think Rise of Anything is just a terrible name. And yes, as a Batman fan, I think in hindsight, The Dark Knight Rises is pretty goofy as well.
Oh, yeah.
Since technically Bruce Wayne who rose in that movie. But before we get into all of that, I just wanted to kind of mention what we're doing this week. Since we did a, if you want to check it out, we've done like a 3-hour recap of E3 on Duos and Podcasts. We kind of went through all 5 of the press conferences, talking about the major games and how it was presented, like that. It would be redundant to do that again. So we're here to just talk about stuff that we were interested in, like the highlights and lowlights of E3 the past 3 or 4 days for us. Yeah. And we're going to kick it off with Justin, who actually has a proper podcast.
What's happening?
Sorry. All right, I'll pause it. Sorry. All right, so do you want me to just, like, go through my top 10, like, one by one or all at once?
I mean, I guess so. It would give this episode some type of format, and then me and Dan can jump in.
I'll just go through, like, one by one.
Go by two.
No. Okay, go by twos. Okay. Is it the Tomb Raider?
What about Lies of the Tomb Raider?
Rise of the Tomb Raider. The sequel to the reboot of the Tomb Raider franchise.
Okay, so just so we're is she called the Tomb Raider now? Like, is she Lara Croft the Tomb Raider?
I'm guessing that this is about her, like, earning up to that moniker.
Yeah, because it was like an origin story, right? That's what the reboot was?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I know that's her profession, but Rise of the Tomb Raider implies that she is the Tomb Raider. There's only one Tomb Raider in the world.
Oh, yeah, but it also says Rise, which
superhero.
Means, like, this is her, like, becoming a Tomb Raider, like, going to multiple locations and raiding.
There you go, you just said a Tomb Raider. So is she the Tomb Raider or a Tomb Raider?
She's going to become, like, the definitive Tomb Raider, I guess.
I don't really know what that exactly means, but I mean...
I don't know, she's going to be, like, the one that everyone looks up to. She's going to be, like, the Superman of the Tomb Raider world.
So my consensus is it still sounds really dumb as a game name.
It sounds awful. Both of them actually are pretty bad. Rise of the Tomb Raider reminds me, of course, of Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the joke that I made. It's like Rise of the Planet of the Tomb Raider.
And the other one is basically ripping off the Indiana Jones format, which is like Lara Croft and the Temple of Arius, which is basically Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yeah, but there's something like kind of kitschy and like, I guess, like retro about that and like unashamed.
Well, it's like
this just sounds kind of like really goofy.
It's like the, what's it called? Lara Croft and the Temple of Light? Is that what the small one is called?
Yeah, it's the sequel to that.
Yeah. Is it the so it's the same sort of gameplay?
Yeah, it's like a top-down 4-player co-op thing.
4-player co-op. Let's co-op all the games this year.
Yeah. No, I like the trailer for Rise of the Planet of the Tomb Raider. I thought that it set a good mood, and I do like that they'll be exploring some of like Lara's PTSD after the first game.
It's weird, not to get into this, I always hate it. It's weird how people have taken that to become sexist.
How's that one that's... Yeah, You're talking about the person who wrote that article?
I don't know if it's an article. Usually this stuff just filters out to me when the discussion breaks out on either side.
Okay.
Some people think it's sexist because it makes her appear weak because she's getting counseling.
Right, but I feel like that makes her appear human because it would be, like, disrespectful to not touch upon, like, what she went through. Or to have her dismiss it as, like, a thing.
Well, it would make her seem as superhuman if she didn't have to do that.
Right, and make her seem, like, cold and robotic.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, it depends on how she's written, I guess. but that's kind of like the... If she doesn't go through PTSD, then she's just kind of like action hero star, like Master Chief or Gears of War character or anything else.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just what it is. What's number 9?
Number 9 is Infamous First Light. I'm actually kind of intrigued at what they're going to do with this and how they're going to differentiate between Delton and Fetch since he's, like, the source of his neon power.
Well, from what I understand, this is an origin. So I assume it's going to be her kind of being weaker and getting up there in power.
Kind of. And
You said you saw the Sony stream, right? Sony event. Did they have a post show?
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
Why?
Because I went to the movie theater, because they were showing it at movie theaters, and we had like a half an hour post-show after it, and I didn't know if that was it. And they were talking about like how this story's going. Of course, it takes place before Infamous Second Son, mm-hmm. and how it's dealing with her just kind of like when her powers manifest.
Right.
So I imagine it's going... that's basically saying they're going to get around her being super strong by just kind of introducing the powers throughout the game. And I assume it's not a long campaign or anything like that.
I'm guessing it's going to be like at least 5 hours. If that.
How long was Second Son?
According to some people, it was around like 10 to 12 hours if you played like on one side. I ended up like beating like the last half of the game for my friend at his house. So I can't comment on, like, how long it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is a trend that I would like to see happen more often, but it's standalone DLC, so you don't actually need to own Infamous Second Son to buy it or pay it.
Like Blood Dragon.
Right.
Yeah. Or the GTA ones, which they eventually, like,
No, I think you needed.
I mean, they eventually sold them. They eventually sold them separately, which was like
on them. Disc. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It's also one of the few games I think from all of the companies that actually has a female lead, even if it's a DLC.
Right. Which many people have been very, very quick to point out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not saying this in a bad way. It's just like the. This is, like, one of the top examples that people have been using this year.
Yeah.
Especially after another game that was on my list.
Was it Tomb Raider?
No.
Actually, I was going to say, it was a decent... Okay, I'm not going to say decent year. I don't think Microsoft had any... Oh, I mean, they had Tomb Raider.
If you want to get technical, they had Dragon Age.
Yeah, okay. I mean, RPGs are weird. They don't want to say weird because you can create your own character, but, you know, the fact that they give you an option works.
Yeah.
EA had...
Mirror's Edge.
Prototype.
Apparently they had... Yeah, the prototype. So they just had, like, concept art is what I heard.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't see EA. Yes, they had...
this is what I heard. They had, like, a lot of, like, stuff in progress or conceptual stuff and concept art being shown.
Basically, their entire conference was just like, hey, we've got games that we're working on.
Yeah. Their basic press conference was, we weren't prepared for this year, so bear with us.
Although, I can kind of understand, because after certain games have looked good at shows and not lived up to their hype in-game, like when they hit release, I can kind of see why they would like dial things back a bit.
I will... say, and I'm not usually a fan of this, I would much rather get CG Troys than what EA did, which is literally just going to people and showing, like, character models or environments or showing workspaces. Like, I think Criterion Games now are going to have desks, they all work together, and sometimes they work in a pub. Like, that, I mean, it's cool to get inside, it's kind of cool to see the back, you know, behind the scenes stuff, but that's not what you do at a major press conference. That's kind of something you put up on the, on a YouTube as a video doc.
Yeah.
The making of something like that. And when you do it for, again, if you do it once or twice, it's okay. When you do it for more than half your games or half your press conference, it just shows that you had nothing prepared for this show.
Yeah.
And probably should have stayed home.
Well, I think it speaks to the fact that it's a shareholders conference is what E3 is, and people don't realize that. They think that it's for them, for the gamers and stuff. At least a lot of the premature gamers, I should say, people who are not like as in touch with the industry, think that, oh yeah, this is so for me. This is for every consumer ever. This is what this conference is, but it's not. So they had a presence, yes, but it wasn't a good one. But it was enough to appease shareholders. Even so, though, like you said, Earl, it still was not a very favorable thing. I don't think any shareholders would like to hear from EA that basically EA is like, yeah, we have games, but we're working on them, and there's not anywhere close to stuff. So like that
totally
just shows the shareholders they didn't plan to release anything in 2014. They didn't have any contingency.
Yeah, you know, all the shareholders that like weren't arrested for selling stocks after their last game tanked. This was like during Battlefield 4. Some of their shareholders were like accused of selling stocks.
Oh, I thought you said socks.
No, confused. Sorry.
EA branded socks. You get half of it, and you have a bunch of holes in it.
All right. Can we move on to the next one?
Sure.
Halo 5 Guardians.
I will back up a bit, and I would say the Halo Master Chief Collection. I think that is one of the best deals in gaming history. And I know that's probably, but I mean, you get all four games, two of them remastered. I mean, granted, 3 and 4 already in HD. And
right, but remastered for HD.
Yeah,
4,000 gamer score, all the over 100 maps. That is a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah,
personally am not a fan. Go on.
I was gonna say, more importantly than the 100 maps is you also get the original game styles as well, which I imagine is going to be very jarring for some people.
So is that going to be like how it is for all four games, or just for 1 and 2?
I think it's all four games, because all four of them are very different.
Okay. Where, like, you press the back button and like the graphics change. Is that what you're talking about?
Oh no! I meant how like there's certain things that they introduce and drop in each Halo game.
Oh, okay, I get you.
Yeah, so each one's going to have that specific function. You know, like the pistol was a major weapon in Halo 1.
Dual wielding was a thing in like Halo 2 and 3. I understand.
And 3 had like the
deployables.
Armor. Yeah, and then 4 had the armor abilities and stuff like that. So
it's
going to be interesting to see how that franchise evolves, and it's going to be very jarring because, like, I think 1, 2, and 3 don't have like a running ability. And 4 introduces that and stuff like that. So it's going to be really interesting to see how all of that plays, especially being that you can mix it up and play them.
And play. So I'm guessing that like they're going to have like during like the pregame lobby, they're going to be like this map on Slayer. There's like this game type on this map, like parentheses, this Halo game.
Yeah, something like that.
That's how I imagine it's going to be, especially if you can like mix up the playlists.
Yeah, I was going to say the number of playlists is going to be absolutely just staggering.
Yep. Like, can you imagine a first-time Halo player, and they're like, okay, which playlist I want to go, and they find like 60 different playlists.
Yeah. I mean, Bungie's good about that, whatever company, you know, I meant.
Yeah.
The Halo creators.
Mm-hmm. All right. Number 7.
Is there anything else you want to say about Guardian?
Oh, yeah. I'm glad that they're bringing back the Arbiter, and I kind of want to know more about the new guy. I forget his name.
What new guy?
Locke or something like that, the agent in the trailer. And it's interesting that they're going to put out the Guardians beta like just a couple days before Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yep.
Yeah, no, it's after Christmas, actually.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Oh,
it's like a couple days after.
It's December 27th. It's certainly the closest they can get to putting it out at the end of this year. And I think this is the big takeaway from E3 this year, is 2014 is pretty barren for the rest of the year from everybody.
Yeah. Unless you're Nintendo, Master Race.
Even Nintendo's kind of barren. I mean, if you have a 3DS and a Wii U, it's probably better, but, I mean,
if
I think
you just have one or the other, you're kind of SOL.
Even with one or the other, you've still got two games, at least.
Well, I mean, you have games. Like, there are games coming out for the other systems, but, like,
exclusive games.
The big story from E3 this year was, we'll see you in 2015.
Basically.
Because, yeah, it was... Because, I mean, Microsoft had their press conference, and, like, two of their major excuses for this year, in quotes, was the Halo 5 beta and the Project Sparks beta.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Fables beta was also the end of this year. And it's like, that's not technically a game.
Yeah.
That is kind of weird. I have a kind of negative view about companies toting betas as, like, a cool, feature, I guess, for their consumers.
I don't mind it.
I can see the appeal, but I can also see, like, where that can backfire.
It's cool to say it, but if you're going to, like, as a press conference say, yeah, what you have to look forward to is a beta, like, no, you should be doing that yourselves, guys.
Well, no, I actually I like the idea of testing it out, especially when it's an actual beta. Like, Halo's going to be months and months before the game's out. I don't think beta, like, 2 weeks before the game comes out, because then it's a demo.
Yeah, that's what the past couple of Battlefield games have done, where they give it to you, like, a month before the game actually comes out.
Titanfall, same thing.
They're pretty good with that now, because the Battlefield beta is going on right now.
Yeah, do you know how long it's going on?
I don't know, because I think it's 2 weeks.
It's 2 weeks?
It's really weird, I guess while we're talking about this, it was also weird that Sony kept on saying, like, you can play it first on PlayStation, and it's like, oh, you can play the alpha, you can play the beta. I'm like,
For Destiny?
Yeah, for Destiny, for Battlefield, for all these. And I'm like, one, it's like, really, that's not very much of a selling point. I can play it in a fancy demo quickie. A broken game, basically. And the other thing is, and I've had this rant before on the other show, I think the idea of exclusive or timed betas and alphas is dumb. If the whole point is to get feedback, you want as many people playing as possible.
And you can't do that if you have, like, half your market, like, just twiddling their thumbs for, like, 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, or not getting it at all.
Yeah.
And it's a weird concept, especially if you want exposures, like something like Destiny.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've heard a lot of people, and we'll probably have more on this over the weekend on our show, because some people... But I heard a lot of people kind of came away, you know, kind of so-so on Destiny from, like, the stage prize in Australia. But playing the beta, a lot of people seem really happy with it, and you want that goodwill, you want that good word of mouth, since it's a one console and a set number of people... seems to be very anti what you want to do.
Yep.
But, what's number six, I guess?
Seven. Number seven is Crackdown.
Number pending? What does that mean?
Yeah, which means, like, either it's, like, just straight Crackdown, or it's Crackdown 3.
Oh, yeah, Crackdown 3. It looked really good. I'm happy for Crackdown. I like the first one. I never played the second one because I've heard negative things about it. It does go against what... It has two things I hate about video game trailers, though. One is
the music.
No, it's pretty CG.
Yeah.
Which is never a good thing.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, it's CG while, like, retaining its look, kind of like the Mortal Kombat trailer from last week.
Yeah, which I thought was really stupid in hindsight, because Mortal Kombat X on its own looks really damn good.
Yeah.
They could have just made the game in that. They could have just made the trailer in that engine, and it would have worked just as well.
Yeah. What was your second one?
I was gonna say my second one is given a game with, like, it didn't have a release window. Like, it's not 2015. It's just, I guess, Crackdown.
I thought they said 2015.
No, they didn't say anything for it.
Did they? Huh. All right. Okay. I did not know that. I thought they said 2015.
No,
yeah,
they had a segment which is 2015 and beyond, and that one did it. They never specified it was 2015.
Yeah. Well, I like the franchise, and it sounds like they're leaving Pacific City from the sound of the narrator. Because he said, like, your gang was, like, pretty tough back in Pacific City, so if it takes us to other places to blow up, especially if we can blow stuff up like they did in that trailer, then I will be pretty happy.
I don't know if it's going to give you that much control, but that was pretty awesome.
That was like Mousetrap level insane.
Yeah, that was fun. Really fun. I love the craziness of the game.
Yeah. And you said you didn't play Crackdown 2, right?
No.
It was okay, but not as great as the first one. There are things that worked about 2, like the 4-player co-op and the wingsuits and stuff that they should carry over to this next installment.
Wingsuits are in, as you saw with Far Cry 4.
Yeah.
Okay, what is number 5?
6.
I thought Crackdown was
5
six.
Now.
No, Crackdown was 7.
No, I thought Crackdown... Wait, okay.
No, okay,
go so,
okay, 10
whatever.
Was Tomb Raider, 9 was Infamous, 8 was Halo, so it was Crackdown.
Okay, I could have sworn you said it was 6.
No.
But, go on.
6 is Dragon Age.
Inquisition.
Over The Witcher?
The Witcher just doesn't seem like my type of thing from what I know.
It's pretty much
so
the
far.
Same type of game, except this is
just
more... Like, I feel like the only difference is that Dragon Quest has a party and The Witcher doesn't as much.
I mean, The Witcher also doesn't come out for like another 8 months.
Yeah, but you just said Crackdown, which has no release window.
I also like Dragon Age.
Okay, I'm just saying that I saw The Witcher, and then I saw Dragon Age, and I'm like, why did you bother putting this in this order?
The
Witcher looks like a much more interesting game. To me, anyhow. So, tell us about Dragon Age. The only thing I remember from the Dragon Age trilogy is it has a backdoor poster in it.
Yeah, that. I like Bioware games. I want to see like where this one goes. A lot of people were not hot on Dragon Age 2, but I like it quite a bit.
You might be the only person.
Yeah, well... And its combat looks to be right up more my alley, which is why I didn't like the first one, because it felt too PC-ish.
And you don't think this one
like
be...
politically correct?
Nah, like PC like PC Master Race-ish.
I know.
Okay. Number 5.
Assassin's Creed Unity.
Ah, the all-white brigade.
Yeah. This was written before that whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, my basic...
Do we want to get into that?
I just gotta say, my basic rule of thumb is don't say anything. If you don't have a good answer, don't try to justify it. They did, and there's nothing good that could come out of that, because everybody's going to tear it apart, especially once you see games that do have female characters, which you saw a couple of, and it's, you know, they've had female characters in Assassin's Creed before.
I
guess you're lagging behind. Go on, what were you saying?
Sorry. I was going to say, if they had started with their most recent, which is everyone is playing as their own of Arno, instead of being like, we didn't have the time for it, that would have made things go over a lot easier.
Yeah, if they had had any valid response other than the one that they gave.
Yeah, because like the guy who used to work for them basically like called them out on that shit.
Oh, yeah.
Once that happened,
I'm calling them out on it. I know artists actually do rigging much, you know... Not as intense as Ubisoft, but still, the same principle applies. Like, it's not as much work as Ubisoft's making it out to be.
Right, and even so, they have, like, 10 different studios working on that thing, so it's hard to take them at their word when they say that, when they have, like, the entire country working on this.
Assassin's Creed is probably one of the most man-intensive franchises as far as people working on it. Like, the average game has about 1,000 people working on it.
I think the last Assassin's Creed had, like... Like, at least 6 of their studios working on it.
Yeah, and to say that you don't have... especially when you're making this big jump. And I think the big problem was... It's not, you know, because... The big problem was it's 4 characters who are four identical characters. It's not like it's not just women. It's like there's four white dudes. You couldn't make like a old gentleman.
They
couldn't make an African American.
Like, they literally all look the same aside from like their facial hair.
Yeah, and it's like you couldn't like nobody thought like it's going to be weird if we have four of the same exact characters and no diversity whatsoever. It becomes harder and harder. Like even if they gave a lame excuse, like they're actual brothers who all happen to be assassins or something, that would have worked other than saying like we just can't, we don't have the money or time to do it.
Like it's like that answer would be bullshit, but it's not like it's like slightly less bullshit than the original response that they had.
Oh, it's still 100% less. So.
Going off of the gameplay from the Microsoft conference, that did look pretty sweet, but I do think it's one of those games that you have to play with friends, otherwise someone's going to dig all of you over.
Yeah, it also, like, basically how it started for me was, it looks really great with all those characters on the map, and then you kind of get into the game, and it's like, this is Assassin's Creed.
Mm-hmm.
What is next?
Hold on. Having said that, this franchise really does need to, like, slow the fuck down and take a year off.
Nothing stops this train. Nothing.
Like, I just want to, like, strap some bombs to it, maybe, like, crack down it, right? Just, like, drive another train into it, and, like, it explodes into the sky. Alright, anyway. Number four is Far Cry.
Also four. Number four.
Yeah. Far Cry.
Oh, God. If I hear people calling it that, like, as a mainstream
thing. I'm sorry. I was kind of sold on, like, the first 5 minutes alone with that opening cinematic with you, the monkey, and the maybe Asian, maybe Russian dude.
He seemed more like a Ukrainian or Eastern Russian, etc.
According to Ubisoft, he's Asian because of like his name or something. I don't know. Yeah, it's weird. But he looks to be a lot more of a different villain than the last guy.
Doesn't even look to be. Well, I mean, he looks to be a villain, but I don't understand what his relationship with the player character is.
I'm assuming like he is the player character's uncle.
Because it seems like that.
Yeah, because he's talking like, I recognize those eyes anyway, my boy. And,
yeah.
And I get, like, you as the character are going to that island to, like, spread your mother's ashes. And he talks about, like, oh, this guy here is your plus one.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming there's, like, family bonds in there.
It seems like an interesting premise, whatever the relationship is, because this guy just comes and, like, terrorizes everybody else with you, but leaves you intact and is actually, like, happy to see you. So it's, in to some degree, he's at least psychotic and he's at least powerful in the area as well. So it definitely seems like a very interesting dynamic that they're presenting with it, especially since Far Cry 3 had an interesting dynamic as well with, like, the player character and the friends versus Voss and what's his name?
Like Hoy or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like his line at the end where he's just like, you and me, we're gonna fucking tear shit up. And he just gets so happy, he's like, he's covered in blood.
I'm interested, honestly, the biggest thing with the characterization that I'm interested in is seeing how, with that relationship where he's kind of like buddy-buddy with the player character, how he becomes the antagonist, or even if he does become the antagonist, because it seems like one of those things where you're like...
It could be a fake-out.
It could, or like kind of like what Voss was, I guess. Spoilers for a 2-year-old game. But like, kind of like how it seems like he'll just be taking you on this journey, and you'll just be doing things at his beck and call, kind of arbitrarily almost, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And just because he says so, and then you'll at some point have to find a way to kill him because he is the antagonist this entire time.
Right.
Okay.
I'm also intrigued at how their co-op is supposed to work, because at the Sony conference they said that people can play a co-op, but only one person has to have the game for it to be co-op.
3DS download play.
Yeah, that's great, but I feel like
that sounds cool. I want to know more about that.
Well, Well, based on what I hear, it's not co-op in the sense that it's story co-op, but it's specific like co-op missions or a like co-op mode. And I think
it is story co-op.
I might be hearing conflicting information because what I heard it was, and it was specifically missions. But again, I could be wrong. But I feel like they wouldn't give you free co-op because then like one person would buy the game and you can give it to like 10 of your friends. That would cut your sales by a lot.
We shall see. Okay. Number three?
yes, number three.
Okay. Sunset Overdrive.
Woo!
I am really excited. I'm like really excited for this one, and that trailer totally sold me. The moment they showed the Insomniac logo, I'm just like, aw yeah.
I didn't watch the E3 trailer, but and I have no interest at all in getting an Xbox One, not even for Sunset Overdrive. But that looks like a great game.
Yeah. You did. So you said you didn't see the trailer?
Not the E3 one. I've seen the previous ones.
Basically, it starts like a military shooter where it's like this character thing is ammo crate fight these hordes of enemies, and then it shows the Insomniac logo and like this guy on the cover just like surfs the door and like starts shooting down all the enemies, and then like he looks at the guy and just like I helped you, faithful soldier, and he steps outside and the soldier's following him. It's like this colorful area with zombies, and one of the zombies just like bites the soldier in the neck and kills him. And it's like a very colorful game. It's very funny. It's not afraid to like poke fun at others. And it definitely feels like an Insomniac game, just more mature.
Yeah, definitely. I would say so. It sounds like a lot of people are talking about the weapon variety is very Insomniac.
Yes, there's a gun which shoots like 8-bit records.
There's the teddy bear launcher. My takeaway was it was some of the items sounded interesting, like the Captain Ahab, which shoots like a harpoon that sticks into stuff and then it leaks out juice that attracts the monsters.
Mm-hmm.
But that sounds interesting. But then some things like the teddy bear launcher is that's literally just a grenade launcher.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as an aside, or I guess kind of could build on that point, I did like to see that we had a lot of variety in the shooter market at this E3.
Oh, yeah.
Not just in the types of shooter, but also in the design on Nook. Sunset Overdrive is an extremely bright and colorful shooter, which we don't see often. Far Cry is an extremely bright and colorful shooter. Well, not bright, colorful.
It's very tribal.
Far Cry 3 was actually probably more colorful in that sense.
Yeah.
It's naturalistic because it's actually, you know, it's outside, there's mountains, there's rivers, there's grass. Yeah. So it has a very lived-in environment to it.
Hardline has like this kind of like gritty NCIS sort of look to it.
Yeah, like I said, when I saw the trailer during EA's press conference, it looks like a game that should have come into USA Network. It looks like a USA Network show.
I think news reports, like when the game leaked, even said it'd be like it's kind of like NCIS or Battlefield Chicago or something.
Yeah, because that's what it looks like. It looks like something that would air on the network. And Nintendo's new IP, Splatoon.
Splatoon looks really good.
It looks, it's Nintendo, so it's extremely colorful.
Yes.
It looks like Mirror's Edge meets The Blob, in that it's a pretty wide and sterile environment.
And you have to, make a mess, basically.
Yeah, you already paint the town.
Yeah.
And it's not, like, very, it's not, it's, like, pink and blue and neon green. So it's not, like, simple colors. It's not, like, base colors. It's, like, extremely bright colors. And you can see it. It's, you know, it's very different because, like, you traverse the land because Nintendo, and this is one of my favorite parts of the Nintendo Direct, it's like, why can't you turn into a squid? And, like, yes, that's what everybody thinks of. Why can't you turn into a squid?
That's the type of stuff that I would want to play.
Yes. It was, as an aside, it was kind of funny because I was watching their Nintendo Treehouse Live at E3, which was by far the best part of E3 for me. And they had an interview with the developers of the game. And they're like, some people might be questioning why these characters aren't octopus. And I'm like, at no point did I think the people who turn into squid should be octopus, because that's not what normal people think of. Like, nobody thinks, like, oh man, they turn into squids, they should totally be octopus or octopi. Like, no, like, they turn into squids, and I'm still at that point of the equation. Like, why do they turn into squids? But yes, it was very nice to see those type of shooters on the stage. I'm granted, you still got your Call of Duty, which even Call of Duty looks better now.
Yeah.
Because it has a more sci-fi scent to it.
Yeah. Having said that, I do not think that what they showed at the Microsoft conference should have been what they showed. Because it looked kind of, you know, like, even for a Call of Duty game, it looked kind of like, bleh.
I think
it was just like the pace of the level. More than anything else.
I mean, Call of Duty, I always feel like their E3 showings aren't that impressive. I think it's usually mostly them just showing you what's new. Like, I remember one year it was just, like, the speed bikes through, like, the mountains, and it was just basically showing you the speed bikes in the snow. And, like, it didn't seem that thrilling, because part of the problem with Call of Duty is it's not a very dynamic game. A lot of it is kind of scripted. And so it never really comes off that great, because a lot of the stuff in that demo was kind of, like, the gunplay. You know, like, the things I liked were the UI, like, the very simplified UI they have, and the kind of all-in-one grenade, which you can change on the fly, which is kind of nifty as well. And it was more showing off the sci-fi theme and stuff like that.
Yeah. I am interested in seeing, like, because basically your player character, spoiler alert, like, loses his arm. And I'm wondering, like, is
he's
that, like, a huge game changer as far as, like, what you can do in the game?
He's going to become the Winter Soldier.
God damn it.
You were thinking it.
I thought it was going to be like, you're Skywalker now.
Well, Skywalker uses his head, not his entire arm.
Yeah, you know.
But both of them do. That makes him a Skywalker.
A Sky Soldier.
I don't know what that is.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, number two.
Pokemon.
Batman Arkham Knight.
Pretty close.
It was a really good showing that they did at the Sony conference.
My only comment is that the Batmobile in this next Batman game is literally the Landmaster from Star Fox. So, I mean, Star Fox confirmed.
Right. Batman, Starfield, Knight. Star Fox Knight.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually Bat Fox, Star Knight.
Star Knight. I like the seamless, like, transition from Batmobile to ground. Gotham City looks freaking huge in this one, especially like how he was able to like glide without using the grapple gun, and no loading at all. It appeared to be. Although I wish that they had showed more of the combat, because it was over like pretty quickly, like 3 hits.
Because he's so strong. I mean, he actually is, because he's got, like, that full metal suit, whatever.
Yeah.
He must be actually, like, so strong. So they're going to have to, like, pump up the enemies hardcore.
Right. I like the little keys of Scarecrow, who looks wicked scarred.
Oh, he's a Scarecrow.
He did get eaten by Killer Croc in the first game.
I thought it depended. Am I mistaken?
No.
It was the bait.
Yeah, whoever grabbed the box of Titan, that depended. But like, as far as the story, no, Scarecrow grabbed, like, he got eaten up.
Yeah, the only thing I kind of found jarring about that, unless they revealed who it is, I thought Arkham Knight was the main bad guy. I guess Arkham Knight is Scarecrow, and I missed that.
Yeah, that's my impression.
No, I think that they're working together. Or Scarecrow is like using Arkham Knight as his manpower.
I just found it weird that it was focused on Scarecrow and not Arkham Knight.
Yeah, it definitely confused me the same way.
It was very nice to see him. I have completely forgotten what his character model looks like, because he's not in Arkham Origins or... No, he's in Origins.
He's not in Origins or City.
He's in City. There's a side mission with him in City, but he's not in it.
Yeah, like physically.
I don't think he's in Origins. I think he's in a side mission in Origins, like one mission.
Really?
It's like the one where you go in the clock tower?
I don't think I've gone that far.
Okay.
Maybe.
But yeah, the game is absolutely amazing when they showed the demo on Sony's, like, when he goes up onto the roof and then they pan across the city and you can, like, travel everywhere.
Right.
That is amazing. I don't get the purpose of the Batmobile.
You know, to blow shit up.
Yeah, but it's really awkward when he goes in the Batmobile, like the actual Batmobile.
Like the transition from him going into the Batmobile, or like
no, when
the
he's
way
getting,
you move in the Batmobile.
Like, yeah, not the way you move in the Batmobile. When the Batmobile switches into like the third person shooter, it's really
oh,
okay.
Yeah, that's a bit weird. I don't know why you would have to like do like need a sequence for that. I'd assume that he'd have like some guns already available to aim at.
Well, I feel like it's one, and I felt like this when they showed it, and I could be wrong. It's like they want to justify the existence of the Batmobile, because I still find, I mean, we're so used to it, I find driving to be a much more convenient way to travel. It's much faster. You don't really have as many roadblocks as you would drive in a car, because you have streets, and, I mean, granted, he doesn't really care about sidewalks and staircases, apparently.
Well, he can drive up, apparently the Batmobile can drive up walls in this game.
I guess they took influence from Batman Forever.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Which still makes no sense, no matter how you slice it. And I guess I kind of wish that they kept some civilians in Gotham, because this kind of makes me sound bad. I kind of want to run some people over in the Batmobile.
Batman can't kill people. You see how they made sure he knew that the vehicles were empty before he attacked them. Like they had an actual.
Don't tell me that you weren't thinking that too. As soon as they like announced the Batmobile's driver, it's just like, I'm gonna run over so many people.
No, that is not the first thing I thought of when they announced the Batmobile, Justin. What is your problem?
You're lame. Fun fact about the Scarecrow: he's being voiced by John Noble from Fringe.
Ah,
that's a person.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a person. And I guess kind of on the same note, Batmite was announced for Lego Batman 3, which is kind of awesome.
Is he like a playable character?
I think he's like your guide. I don't know if he's playable.
The trailer for Lego Batman 3 that they did a couple weeks ago actually did look like really funny.
Yeah, the Lego games always have a great sense of humor about them. So yeah, there's that. What is numero uno?
Number one is No Man's Sky.
Huh.
No Man's Sky.
It looked like a really fun game. I like the exploration, I like the music, I like the way that it all seems like seamlessly generated, or procedurally generated, I should say.
Yeah, what was I going to say?
Hold on, they're actually both different things, but yeah. It does seem like both.
Yeah, and after, like, their office flooded, I feel like this is really good work for, like, after that circumstance.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I really was a fan of the guy presenting. He has a really awkward style, but he's very genuine about it. And I thought it was, like, nervousness with being on the stage, but, like I said, they had the post show. And he still kind of had that awkwardness to him when he was being interviewed. So it just seems to be his character when he's trying to speak to people. So yeah, No Man's Sky looks really interesting. I'm really kind of curious to see how it all kind of blends together, because the idea of everybody having a unique, different world sounds interesting, except I don't get the end game.
Sort of like what you're supposed to do in the game, like plot-wise or anything like that?
Yeah, I guess. Like, where would it be located if it's an infinite universe?
Apparently it's all, like, parallel universes, like, so you can't go to your friend's planets, maybe? I don't know.
I thought it was supposed to be, like, the draw to it was that it's supposed to all be the same
universe. I could be wrong.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not following it as closely as many other games, but it sounds cool. It looks very awesome. It's one of those another really colorful game.
Yes, it's a very colorful game. Was anyone confused on what it was when I was first starting?
Yeah. It looks pretty fun though. I like the wildlife and whatnot. I like the environments more than the actual gameplay, I think. It looks like it's fun to look at.
It looks like it's fun to listen to, especially with that that soundtrack.
Yeah, I guess that too.
Did you guys have any games that you really liked or things that you saw that was like your quote unquote game of the show?
Anything that you did not talk about that was at Nintendo's conference was for me.
Bayonetta 2 presentation? I hear that was really fun.
Well, I mean, just before we get into like Bayonetta and what Nintendo had at their show or whoever else, but then I just wanted to say, and I think I mentioned this before, the Nintendo Treehouse live at E3 was the absolute best part of E3 for me. I said that before. It was, I mean, I was surprised they did it. It was 20 hours of them streaming games. And not, like, you know, like how websites have games, but it's usually like a developer coming in, they ask them a bunch of stock questions that they ask at all these events, and then they go through a really quick playthrough of the demo or something like that. Because it's Nintendo basically demoing their own game, they got to go really hands-on and really intense with these games. I think they went 45 minutes with Xenoblade Chronicles X. They did, like, nearly an hour of Codename Steve.
Yeah, they went 45 minutes with most of their games.
Yeah. They did, I think, 4 sessions of Platoon, including, like, you know, versus the fans. They did Developers versus Treehouse. They had several sessions of Smash Brothers. They showed, like, every game.
Plus the Invitational.
Yeah, the Invitational was another big part of that, and I think I don't know if anybody's going to succeed. I don't even know if Nintendo's going to succeed, but I do think next year all three of the companies are going to try to have something like the Smash Brothers Invitational. You get thousands of fans in an auditorium screaming and shouting, and you know people always want that reaction, but you have it constantly for 2.5 hours, and you know those are moments you can't create no matter how much you try. And then you had the fact that it was being watched by, I think at its peak, it was being watched by almost 250,000 people. And the fact of the matter is this was 10 hours after the E3 press conference, and that Tuesday was dominated by Nintendo through the news cycle. It was their press conference. It was them revealing a new game afterwards to the Devil's Third. It was the Smash Brothers Invitational. It was Pac-Man being announced for the Smash Brothers. It was just like...
How was it...
Huh?
Sorry, how is the Devil's Third?
It looks rough. That's
the
new really rough.
game from the Ninja Gaiden guy, right?
Yeah, it looks really rough. I will say that much. I'm not saying it was all good announcements, but the fact of the matter is, they are one of the first companies to make E3 modern. Because how we traditionally think of E3 as people not at the convention is E3 are the press conferences. We sit down, we watch them for 90 minutes to 2 hours. We give feedback, and E3's pretty much done. Like, you'll see some hands-on, you'll read some impressions and stuff like that. But Nintendo's like, you know, E3 is a 3-day event, so we're going to be here. We're going to, you know, bring you to this event. You're going to see all the games we have up here to play, and we're going to play them, and we're going to go in-depth with them. And like I said, it's not like, you know, it's not like a 5-10-minute demo. It's not like the same segment over and over again. It's them doing... it's them going extremely, extremely deep with these games. I think especially, I said this before, if nothing else, for Xenoblade Chronicle X, Codename Steam, and Fantasy Life, I think this format works. Because I've always said RPGs are the hardest genre, I think, to show at a press conference. Because you can't really showcase them in 2 minutes in a trailer and get across what you need to get across. And even if you had like a 5-10-minute demo on stage, it's either going to be really boring to watch for some people, or it's not going to really get across what makes this game special. Because I remember a few years ago, I want to say it was E3 2009, Sony had Square on stage to demo Final Fantasy 13. And it's like a 10-minute demo, and it just really drags.
Real quick. So, Codename Steam, that is the one for the Fire Emblem Awakening team, guys, right?
Yes.
Intelligent Systems. They make all the Fire Emblem games and all WarioWare games. And all the Paper Mario games.
Okay. And so this is like a traditional JRPG? Yes?
No, it's a strategy RPG.
Okay.
The thing that people said it most reminds them of is Valkyrian Chronicles, if you've played that or know what that is. It's kind of a third-person shooter meets strategy RPG. And the strategy
I was going to say, of the games they've made before, Advance Wars is the closest thing to it, which is most like Valkyria Chronicles. It's kind of like goofy take on war, basically.
Okay, and just as an aside, actually, I want to say this. I want to say this about Sunset Overdrive as well. I absolutely love, how people are embracing comic book styles in video games now. Like before, when somebody says like we're taking influence from comic book, it meant that you get like a still, like your story would be told through pitches and not movies, and that basically
from comic books.
Yeah. Sunset Overdrive took it to mean that when it's being told through, it's Sunset Overdrive is like when you show somebody a big shot comes up and it says boom, or stuff like that, and then Project Codename Steam, which is a really terrible name.
It's like when you attack someone, it's like it's an ouch.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Oh, that's their actual name.
And then Codename Steam. It has like actual panel transition. It's like a motion comic come to life. It's comic font. It has word bubbles. It has speech bubbles, and all this other stuff. So it's actually like a moving comic book, and it's really nice to see in motion.
You mentioned Sunset Overdrive and comic books. The writer for Sunset Overdrive is the guy who's currently writing, Deadpool and Nova right now. I think he's like Jerry Duggan.
I was going to switch Deadpool.
Like you said, Deadpool. A comic book that also just happens to be a video game.
I want to say actually one game. One game that recently came out. Already, actually, that sort of tried to do this, I guess, a little bit. I don't think it did it very well, though, was Gravity Rush for Vita. I know it's like a Vita game, so probably like half of nobody's played it, but it had this weird style, and it had this weird style with everything to it, really, but the cutscenes were done in like three different ways. One of them was like comic book panels where you could kind of like follow them like a comic book, but it would take you to the specific panel they're talking about. Some of the ways were just straight up cinematics. Some of them were like voice clips, and some of them were like in-engine sort of like. It was just like there's five different ways they're presenting the information here, and one of them was comic book style, and I don't think it was done very well.
Like the comic book style in particular wasn't done very well, or the cutscenes themselves.
The cutscenes, the comic book style was done very well. It just seemed arbitrary when they were or weren't doing them. It's not like it was for only action or only story. It was just kind of whenever they felt like it. Yeah, comic book style.
So was it done like Sly Cooper style?
I haven't played Sly Cooper games, so I cannot say.
Okay. Sly Cooper has kind of viewed that thing where it's like, they're kind of like comic book panels, but the characters have some kind of movement.
Yeah, it was a little bit like that. But I didn't like it for that particular game. I don't know. I liked the comic books. I just didn't like how it was done.
Not every game does it well. I think Red Steel also did it and didn't do it well. And it was a major PS3 360 title. Going way back into the day. Another game that did it was 13. I don't know if you remember that. It was a cel-shaded shooter on the original Xbox, PS2, and GameCube. And when you shot somebody or did a headshot, it would do like three panels to show you how it connected. So it would be like a comic on top of the gameplay, and that was really cool. But yeah, I do think as a visual style, comics have a lot to offer, especially as far as dynamic storytelling goes. And I do think that Sunset Overdrive is embracing it in the game well. And I think that Codename Steam is embracing it well for a story purpose, as well as a aesthetic design, because like I said, the entire game kind of looks like a steampunk comic book, which is really a nifty style. Probably would have benefited from being on the Wii U, but beggars can't be choosers.
I think those visual styles suit games like that well, because in a day where like people are resorting to hyper-realism, like there's always something about facial animations in like super realistic games like GTA or Bioshock that always looks like a little bit off, or the way that the characters move. So giving them like a cel-shaded or a cartoony look makes it definitely like ages better than realistic games.
Oh, absolutely.
This is what we'll be saying about Watch Dogs like 6 months from now.
We'll be saying Watch Dogs? What's that?
And we'll be making fun of Watch Dogs for its look like 6 months from now.
I actually don't even know many people are talking about Watch Dogs. I mean, granted, it's E3, so that's always a iffy subject because a lot of people, like a Murdered Soul suspect I've actually heard nobody talk about. And it's one of those games
that's actually out?
Yeah.
Yeah, it came out like last week.
That's how much I know about it, but I mean...
Exactly.
Well, to be fair, that's pretty much how it went. Like, I didn't realize it was coming out until reviews started hitting. I'm like, I thought it was a creator in the summer. I didn't realize it was coming out, and the reviews are coming out. I'm like, oh, this game's out this week. You've done a bang-up job marketing it.
Actually, that extends to even when I was at PAX this year. I was at PAX, and it wasn't until like the last hour or two when I was looking around the show floor for other things that I haven't seen that I realized that Square Enix, A, had a booth, and B, was showing off Soul Suspect. And I'm like, what is this? It's like 2 hours before the three-day event is over, and I'm like, this is my first time ever even seeing this.
So what were your thoughts going to be, Dan?
I was working the day of Microsoft and EA, so I didn't actually catch their conferences live, and I didn't care about either of them enough to catch up on them, so I kind of just heard what games came out of them and was like, cool, those are games for consoles, I guess. And then, I mean, EA's I watched all of their trailers for because their games actually interest me. Microsoft's I didn't because I'm not getting an Xbox One, so I mean.
Well, I mean, but, you could have watched it to have them convince you.
Try to convince me futilely. I'm adamant against getting an Xbox One, so. Because I don't need one.
But you need the Xbox One.
Good one. But EA's was basically, we described EA's already. It was disappointing, but they had cool games that they're talking about. It'll be cool to see them next year, I guess, is the takeaway from EA. I didn't even see Ubisoft's, but the takeaway from Ubisoft's was, oh, Ubisoft, why are they even having their own conference? They're showing off all their games at everyone else's conference.
That was takeaway from
they also had, Rainbow Six Siege.
Which they could have done at Sony or Microsoft for us.
Yeah, that looks kind of cool, I guess. I actually shared some opinions with some friends about that one already, and my thoughts on Rainbow Six Siege is that is not what multiplayer is done. I don't know if they know what multiplayer is like.
I have not seen it, so I cannot say.
You should watch the trailer. It's really funny because they take it the typical press conference. What's that?
Hello?
What happened?
Oh.
You just cut out.
Oh. Okay. I was saying that with Rainbow Six and EA and Naughty Dog Sports Fighter, I think neither one of them needed their own press conference. They could have attached it to Microsoft or Sony really easily without losing much. Especially EA, because they could have had a sports montage on both press conferences. The only thing they showed that
did
was...
They not?
No, they didn't. Neither press conference had a sports montage. I was actually surprised that...
Wow.
So I was surprised because Sony usually has like NBA 2K on stage and they didn't have that. I would say the one highlight of EA's press conference with me was my good friend Chuck, the ultimate dude bro.
Who?
I did hear you talking about that.
You didn't see the EA press conference, right? They had. They were playing The Sims and they created a character named Chuck, who was a dude bro. He worked out, he hit on
people. Oh god, alright. No, I think I know where this is going.
And when he got depressed, he threw him a party. So that he's the only guy dancing in the middle of the floor, pumping his fist and stuff like that.
It sounds really sad. It also sounds like something EA would do, so.
But he was, like I said, he was the ultimate dude bro. He was the dude bro of dude bros, which is amazing.
Did he have Mountain Dew?
I don't know, but he died because he was laughing so hard. And
he literally died?
Of after, yes. And the way they presented it on stage is so morbid because the lady presenting it was like, see what happened? He laughed so much he died. I'm like, you never deliver that news with glee in your voice. It's never good.
Oh man, I wish I caught that now. Maybe I'll catch up on that.
Yeah.
But yes, that was the highlight of EA's press conference for me. Sadly, I didn't see most of Ubisoft because that's a for Sony's movie theater experience.
I heard that Aisha Tyler cried while they were showing Rainbow Six Siege.
Oh, like I said, I didn't see the whole thing. And I haven't... Like, the only thing I apparently missed was Rainbow Six Siege. I should still check out the trailer for that.
My biggest complaint with Rainbow Six Siege is they basically do the typical E3 way where they're like, we're going to present this game as perfectly as possible under our conditions, which is fine. They should do that.
Because of that,
and they're showing it off in a multiplayer game, everyone is like the perfect multiplayer player. They're like going into the game like, all right, guys, you ready? Yeah, let's do this. And
that's
it's like,
it's so corny,
and it's like, you have, like, it seems like such a detachment from what actual multiplayer is like. I don't expect them to go full on, like, everyone swearing and cussing at each other, but still, it just seems like, if that's what your opinion of multiplayer is, you're not playing games right.
Yeah, that was my exact opinions of The Division when they showed it, because it was so bad. I actually thought, you know, like how some games have in-game chatter, I thought it was the characters speaking to themselves.
It's just like, hey guys, all right, watch my six. All right, I'm gonna flank around the car. It's just like, oh my god, no one talks. No, there's no human being on this planet who actually talks like that.
Especially when they're in a video game.
Right, like maybe if you're in the military, you could get away with that. But even then, no one talks like that. Don't kid yourself.
And kind of going back to Nintendo's Treehouse thing, this is why I liked it, because they had actual people on there presenting the game, and these were people who were nasty and evil and sassy to each other. They were sarcastic. They were genuine.
Oh,
they
yeah, absolutely. When they're showing Splatoon a little bit, but when they were showing off Toad's Treasure Tracker, or Captain Toad, Treasure Tracker, Nate Bildorf is one of the guys who works at Treehouse, and I think that was the case for most of the Treehouse, right? They had most of the Treehouse employees showing off the games.
Yeah.
And it's like, he got really into it, because it was like, he's really excited for that game, and so he showed his actual true opinions, and that was really cool.
He had a huge man crush on Captain Toad.
Yeah, like, it's really, really cool to see a candid opinion like that, not like the total bias of, this is our presentation, we're going to create it under our conditions, however we want it, and so the multiplayer is going to sound cheesy as butt.
That's apparently that's what happened with the Little Big Planet 3 demo.
Yeah, that was
where people were like genuinely having fun and they had no idea what was going on.
Yeah, that was another one because they messed up, they screwed up, and it was natural because they had to improvise and not like what, you know, like these canned haha, this banter that people have. And that is why I was so keen on the Nintendo Treehouse stuff, because it wasn't like there was no way you could script 20 hours of banter. I don't care how
absolutely.
Much time you have. And there were people showing their genuine side, and they would come back, like, mentioning Nate. Nate has a temper he doesn't like to use. So he also won one of the rounds of the Smash Brothers game, and he tossed his controller.
I mean, it's like, some of the things were, like, I don't want to say scripted, but, like, at the end of the Smash Invitational, Reggie came on stage, and he had some really funny comments to say. I don't really want to spoil it, because it's a really funny.
I think I know one of them.
But, like, he comes on stage and he basically badmouths the winners, like, jokingly, because he's like, I'm bad at Smash Bros., but now with Smash Bros. On 3DS, I'm going to whoop your butt. And it's like, that's somewhat scripted, but it's, like, not scripted, but it's somewhat, like, in a character, a persona that he conveys. But it's still a lot more fun than a lot of the people on stage convey.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, I'm not saying that Nintendo Treehouse was devoid of marketing and PR, but you can have that and still kind of have genuine people producing these games and still give you the hard sell. I mean, kind of going back to another old light of mine was the new president of Sony Computer America when he came on stage, because he wasn't genuine at all. He was a businessman trying to sell you something.
That was rough.
And you could tell, like, he's a guy who had these, and it got really awkward because he was responding to, like, heckles that the audience was saying, and I was like, just stop, you look bad, because he doesn't have, like, a natural, he doesn't seem natural when he does it, it just seems really awkward, and they kept him on stage for, like, 20 minutes, I mean, just get him off, please, and he came out to present the absolute worst information, which I felt would be bad for him.
Yeah, well, I felt like information should have been at, like, CES, or at least, like, half as long as it needed to be.
It's not information that needs to be, it's not information that needs to be shared.
I mean, don't get me wrong, that does sound like cool information.
It doesn't, though. Like,
well, some of the stuff sounded cool.
I guess my big thing was, like, when he was, like, 220 million times and SharePoint had been pressed. And I'm like, what does this factoid mean?
Tell me. I'm pretty sure that, like, at least 30% of those are probably accidental.
Yeah, that's the thing. It doesn't tell you anything. It could literally be one person who presses the ick 1,000 times.
Well, the sentiment they're trying to get across is that this is how many people, or this is how many shares we've had, and this is how many times we've had the service be used, as opposed to like, oh, we have this service and nobody expected to use it, and so it was only used like 10 times across the world.
Yeah, it
like
could
that.
Be people who keep on forgetting it's not the pause button.
Yeah.
Have a pause button or something like that.
Yeah, it's definitely not a perfect number, and I don't. I agree. It doesn't like. What does it represent? It could be like. Who cares? Even it's not like it's this many people. It's this many presses of the button. So why do we care?
Yeah, and it really. It's kind of scary to know that they keep track of that. But yeah, and then that was followed up by the powers presentation, which I won't get into. We got into that.
Yeah,
in other
yeah. Show. Which that. I'm just gonna say this. He looks like the Penguin.
Yes, everybody said that.
I'm sorry,
Kingpin.
I'm sorry, Mr. Bendis.
I'm excited for the show though, and it was actually kind of funny that Sony was the one that harped on TV and movies and not Microsoft this year.
Another thing that we should probably mention, well, I feel like that I should mention, is so they're doing a Ratchet and Clank movie and they're remastering the original Ratchet and Clank for PS4. As far as the latter, that's cool. As far as the first one, that would be great if. That would be great if it was, like, 2007, when the franchise, like...
Oh, my God, I'm so excited for Ratchet & Clank, and I have not played the game since PS2 era, so...
I'm excited, but I also feel like this is, like, about 7 years too late.
No way, I'm super excited for it. I can understand what you mean, I guess, but I still think that people out there are excited for it.
Oh, I'm sure people are excited for it, but I understand what Justin's saying. Like, it should have been marketed, too, when the franchise was at its peak, and not something that comes... after the company has moved on from that brand.
Yeah. Well, not even that they've moved on. I don't think they have, but just...
Insomniac has.
But this feels like a very late move. The same thing with the Sidekicker movie, where it's like, this would have been good, like, back when the franchise was still, like, B-level, at best.
Whoa. There's some Ratchet and Clank hate in here right now.
Well, no, it's like, I love the franchise, but I don't think it has, like, the power and recognition that it does now. Back during the PS2 days, like, that was stuff that people talked about, like, during the PS2 days less so, but now it's kind of in the middle. It kind of feels like, Duke Nukem, or, like, maybe a little bit of Halo, where it's only around, like, it's only around because they keep making it.
I mean, they have a pretty good... I don't know. I always think that Ratchet and Clank has a pretty cool and interesting story that's a little bit atypical from games. It's pretty unique, I feel.
Yeah, the only thing I find weird with this is a prequel. It's an origin tale.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another thing. They are good. I guess this is going to replace the canon from the first game.
Yeah, so that's... And again, not to harp on it too much, I thought it was stupid of them to announce a remake of the original game at a gaming convention show and not actually show the game, but show a movie trailer.
Yeah, that was weird, too. Doesn't make sense. While we're talking about ports to next-gen, we should also, I suppose, mention GTA 5 is coming. GTA 5 and Grim Fandango are coming to the PlayStation 4.
Grim Fandango was the only one that was an actual surprise, though, let's be honest.
I think 90% of all gamers knew that GTA 5 was eventually going to be coming to PS4.
I think some people had different expectations because I think we all knew it when Rockstar Take-Two announced that they would have a Rockstar game for this fiscal year, and they just finished GTA 5. But everybody's like, oh man, it's Red Dead Redemption 2 or something like that. Like, no, it's going to be a part of GTA 5. You know how Rockstar works. They don't
Like, we're not seeing it.
So yeah, that wasn't a surprise, but everybody went crazy for that. Like, I went to the movie theater and people went nuts for Grim Fandango being announced. I didn't know this game had an audience.
People love those Tim Schafer games, so I can guess about Grim Fandango as well, and the rest of his catalog will dip wall. So before we
It's I don't want to make this comparison because I'm probably it's the Edgar Wright of video games. Like people who
that makes sense.
People who like his game love them, but nobody buys them.
Yeah, that's totally. I'd also say the same thing about Studio 51 with his game. What was it called? Let It Die.
Well, Let It Die looks awful, especially since they canceled Lily Berghammer for it.
I've never even heard of Lily Berg. I've never even heard of that Lily game.
It was an, I think it was announced last year at TGS. It was but it looked like a really interesting style. And this just looks like Manhunt one-on-one fighter or something like that.
This looks like every other Suda 51 game.
Well, Suda 51 had a style to it before. This looks very generic.
I mean, yeah. No More Heroes was fun. And then Killer is Dead looks like No More Heroes, but take away the quirkiness and basically just apply the same gameplay. Same thing with every one of his games. They're all just like over the top, like somewhat quirky in a somewhat different way, fighter or brawler or beat 'em up, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, but this one doesn't even look like that. It looks like a generic game. Like, his action doesn't even stand out in it because it looks so generic.
That's true, too, but I feel like Killer is Dead was the most generic of them because it was just like Killer is Dead could describe any other of Suda 51's games, and it looked like any other of Suda 51's games boiled down to its like most bare bones like potential, I guess. It was just like the quintessential Suda 51.
Yeah, yeah. Any other takeaways from E3?
We didn't talk about Nintendo enough. Nintendo rocked it.
I will say this much, for their presentation, they did a good job of hiding the fact that they had so little content. You honestly wouldn't think that they had about 15 games at the show from the amount of coverage they gave it, and they, you know, and I think that was a good thing. And I think the other big thing with them, especially being that a lot of people always have these if this, that, and that, is that they announced a handful of new IPs, and these weren't, like, you can't, like, there's no workaround for them, because usually when they have new IPs, it's like, it's an eShop, it's not made by Nintendo internally, it's not, you know, it's not given a push. They pushed Platoon to hell. Like, Platoon was the game after Smash Bros. For this year at this show.
Oh, yeah, Splatoon looks like, I'm so pumped for Splatoon. Like, oh, my God.
That's a Wii U game, right?
Yeah.
So, like, if there was any game that was going to get a Wii U, that would be the one.
Seriously.
And I also think, I think kind of as an aside, I think the Bayonetta deal is amazing as well.
Mm-hmm.
Where you get Bayonetta, you get an enhanced port of Bayonetta 1 on the Wii.
Yes, but I also feel like that's a great deal.
Yeah, that's an amazing deal, especially being that, like, it's a great deal that they're just giving it to you for free. Like, there's no, like, it's $60. And you get it both physically or digitally. I think that's amazing. And if you are picking up a Wii U this year, I mean, right now, you can get Mario Kart with a free game, and you can get Bayonetta with Bayonetta 2.
You get a
free game with the system. So,
Omega Ruby and,
Alpha Sapphire.
The Sapphire. Yeah, you got those coming out in, like, what, the fall?
Yeah.
November.
They have a decent fall lineup once it gets going. I think every month except for August has a major exclusive title.
August does have something. I forget what it is.
Because they have Wii Sports Club in July. They have Hyrule Warriors in September.
Hyrule Warriors confirmed for September?
Yeah, September 29th, I think they said.
Yeah, something like that.
And you have Bayonetta in October, and then Smash Brothers either November or December. So it's a pretty the big problem is, and this is always going to be their problem. It's like once you get past your exclusive, there's really nothing else on the system.
That's what makes it a good buy, I guess. If you're into Nintendo, like I don't know, a lot of people would say that the best console combination to get for this generation is a good PC and a Wii U.
Yeah, that's much the. Especially for the remainder of this year, because if you have a PC, you can pretty much get all the major multi-platform games. And Sony and Microsoft have a very thin lineup. And I think we mentioned this at the start. The big, big, big takeaway from E3 this year for me is that 2015. Yeah,
yep.
2015 is the year.
Like Arcanite, that was 2015. The Witcher 3.
The Order. Yeah.
Well, there's something else that is, like, big, that is also coming.
Division?
No, not the Division.
I mean, there's a ton of big
Bloodborne?
Yes, Bloodborne does look intriguing from the trailer. Yeah. I'm intrigued by Scalebound.
Quantum Break is next year.
We're gonna come out, quote-unquote, big games.
But, yeah, I mean, next year has those four games. It has, you know, it has Zelda. It has almost all, you know, it has Yoshi. It has Uncharted 4, which you didn't mention. It has Mortal Kombat.
I'm not a huge, like, fighting game fan, but the Mortal Kombat trailer that they showed was really good. And it kind of makes me want to get into Mortal Kombat now.
I'm not a huge fighting game fan, but I've always enjoyed Mortal Kombat because Mortal Kombat is, I think it's probably the second most, I think right now I would probably say DOA is pretty user-friendly as far as getting in. Because I don't know how new DOA games are, but the old one were really counter-heavy, so you just need to know how to counter stuff, and that was pretty simple since it was button press. But Mortal Kombat's pretty straightforward since it's not it's half circle and quarter circles, it's just back and forth, up and down. You know, you have to, you know, down, up, and stuff like that. Very simple command compared to, like, Street Fighter or Battlefield. And it's not about, like, hitboxes and half frames and stuff like that.
That's very true. Like, Smash Bros. Smash Bros. Is slightly different because it's technically a mascot fighter. But, like, yeah, same thing. It's just button presses. It's not, like, combinations and half circles, all that jazz.
Yeah, which is why those tend to be the two of the most popular fighting games. I think that's it for us this week. If you gentlemen have anything else to say.
No, I would just basically extend the conversation to being about Nintendo if we had it my way. But I'm so excited for everything Nintendo. I mean, the only other thing I think we should touch up on that hasn't been talked about at all is the Amiibo system. But, I mean, that's like Disney Infinity.
With Nintendo Skylanders?
Yeah.
Essentially. I mean, it's still a cool concept, though, because I feel like Nintendo does DLC correctly so far, and I'm not saying they won't do it correctly in the future, but they have so far, and I trust them going forward, and it seems like Amiibo's got the right sort of style to it, too. They're not nickel and diming you. They're saying, like, oh, if you want this extra figure or if you want, like, these extra features, you can get these figures, and they're not just going to be, like, a character. They're actually going to have some depth to the game to add to it. Plus, they look awesome.
We will talk about that some other time. But for Justin, Dan, and myself, this has been Nerds on the Rocks episode 174.